irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, I want to take this time to acknowledge you. And I'm going to read a few of them. And please understand, we really appreciate this. So just keep them coming. One reads, thank you for being a strong, positive force in the community. We have another one that says, thanks for making the world a better place with your passion and service. And a third that reads, you and your audience with their insightful questions are amazing. So, and I agree with that one. They are. We get some great questions. So please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And then you can all do me a huge favor. When the show is over, please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular show. And I think at the end of this show, you will all know somebody that can benefit from this one. Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and sometimes fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is The Grand Family Guidebook, Wisdom and Support for Grandparents Raising Grandchildren. Now, did you know that there are 65 million grandparents in the United States, many of whom are doing a lot more than taking their kids out for a quick day at the park and delivering them back home to their parents? There's approximately 3 million American grandparents who are the sole caretakers of their grandchildren, and more of us will be in that same situation, wondering how we're going to raise our children's children. So now more than ever, with substance use, which has made many birth parents simply unfit for the job, the opioid epidemic has ravished families across the country. Grandparents are stepping out of retirement to care for their grandchildren. Now, to discuss this and more, our guest, Dr. Andrew Adsman, is a professor of pediatrics at the Donald and Barbara Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra Northwell. He co-wrote the Grand Family Guidebook with health and self-help writer Christine Adamant, who, along with her husband, are now raising a grandchild as well. Dr. Adamant is also the author of Baby Facts, and he recently completed a nationwide survey of grandparents serving as parents. Dr. Adamant, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Good morning, Alan. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure. I've enjoyed not only going through the book, but I'm learning a lot more of the statistics and things that I didn't know. But being someone who works with families whose children in many cases have had to deal with drug and alcohol abuse, it was very interesting for me to get some of the statistics. Now, I mentioned in the opening that the opioid epidemic has obviously had a huge toll in this, but what are some of the other reasons why millions of grandparents are raising their children's children?
Well, the opioid epidemic is probably the number one cause. And as many of your listeners may know, just last week, the mortality figures for 2017 were just released. And the preliminary figures suggest that it's, 2016 was the highest to date, and 2017 exceeded that with a 7% increase. And so in last year alone, there were 72,000 deaths in the United States due to drug overdose. Obviously, there are many, many more individuals who are addicted, incarcerated, hospitalized, or just otherwise unable, as you indicated, to parent their children. So it's not just the mortality statistics that lead to a greater number of grandparents raising their grandchildren, but it's just, you know, the other secondary consequences of substance use. But apart from substance use, psychiatric issues, obviously schizophrenia, mental illness in its various forms can render a parent unfit. In some instances, other health issues, motor vehicle accidents, other homicides or other mortality. The military, occasionally, if people have sustained deployments overseas, then parenting their child may fall to other family members. excuse me. And then, you know, in some cases, just, you know, immaturity. For whatever reason, parents just lack, birth parent may lack the commitment or emotional maturity to parent. In some cases, this may result in child abuse or neglect. And in those instances, various social service agencies or other family members or both may step in terms of making alternate arrangements for child care.
Now, I know, and I've heard you say that, you know, while grand families are often formed in a crisis situation, like many of which that we just discussed, which is obviously like the opioid addiction or incarceration, you said that they're also built and strengthened over time. Explain what you mean.
Certainly, if a grandparent, let me just backtrack a step. The book is primarily focused on grand families with a focus on grandparents, but there are also other kinship arrangements where aunts, uncles, and other extended family may be stepping in. And I think many of my comments really do extend to, you know, kinship placements or kinship adoptions, or the broader term, grand families getting beyond grandparents. So I just wanted to sort of preface, you know, all future comments in that context. But, you know, if a family member, you know, gets a call on the phone or gets a knock on the door because of some crisis, you know, that can be life-changing. In some instances, there were warning signs in terms of either perhaps, you know, mental illness that didn't require hospitalization or decompensation. It could be substance use problems that they thought were behind them and turns out spiraled out of control. But the bottom line is, in some instances, there's some advance warning. In other instances, there's not. But when family members step in, grandparents or others step in to assume care for a child, it's very disruptive. You know, it's traumatizing. It represents obviously a breakdown in terms of the mother-child or parent-child bond. It usually involves some other tragedy, whether it be, you know, hospitalization, a death, incarceration. So it's an emotional time in that regard. If there's abuse or neglect, then you've got a child who's been, you know, in some way, shape, or form, you know, egregiously mistreated, either actively or passively. And then a grandparent or other family member will step in, do right by the child, and hope that, number one, in the short term, that they can better meet that child's needs, but also hoping, oftentimes, not always, but hoping that circumstances may change and perhaps, you know, the child's birth parent, you know, may be able to recover or be in a better position to parent that child. And so oftentimes, arrangements, kinship placements, grand families, when they're created, those other relatives may not anticipate it being as long a commitment as possible. But which leads me to that next point. You know, with time, once the crisis is a little bit more in the distance time-wise, once new routines are established, once grandparents in this case or other family members get us, you know, used to the new routine in terms of raising a child over again, you know, progressively they realize they're making a huge difference in the life of these children, that their heart is full of love, they create a warm, loving, nurturing environment for these children. And undoubtedly, a kinship placement in these kinds of circumstances is the best place for a child. And it goes without saying that for a child to grow up in a nurturing home loved by family members is the best one can hope for when, you know, tragedy strikes in terms of the parent.
Yeah, and I can see that. I know that we've dealt with families in which the parent has been incarcerated or is dealing with some drug or alcohol issues. And one of the positives that I've seen is that when they've gone through their treatment, they've come back out and they've seen how happy their child is with the child's grandparents, that it helps bring all of them together, and it seems to motivate some of them to not fall back into the patterns that got them in trouble to begin with. So yeah, I've seen some very positive things from that. Now, go ahead.
No, I just, you know, parenting a child can be immensely rewarding, but it's not effortless. It requires commitment. It requires time, energy, and, you know, grandparents, you know, generationally may have thought this was behind them. They may not have the energy that they once had. But on the other hand, as we've noted, close to 3 million grandparents step up and take on this responsibility and typically do an extraordinary job under many adverse circumstances. You know, these are oftentimes disadvantaged families with limited means, and taking on the responsibility can be life-changing. And certainly, you know, for many grandparents who step in and take on the responsibility, it can be immensely rewarding, but it is certainly life redefining. You know, the retirement, as you hinted, the retirement they thought they would have is no longer going to be quite what they anticipated. The financial planning that went into their future obviously is now being thrown a curveball. And I'm sure in the course of our hour together, we can talk about some of the resources that are available. But the bottom line is, you know, there's profound implications and changes for grand families when they step in. But they generally do a wonderful job, and it's certainly in the best interest of the child.
Well, and before we go into the resources, you know, I think, as I mentioned, you conducted one of the largest and most comprehensive nationwide surveys of grand families before writing the book. So tell us a few of the most poignant facts that you gleaned from that, or maybe those things that surprised you.
Yes, let me tell you briefly about the study. We reached out really to grandparenting support agencies and other senior-focused agencies. Sent them a link to an online questionnaire and asked these support groups and other organizations to forward it to grandparents raising grandchildren, their grandchildren. And we had approximately 700 responses. And so we had a very robust response in terms of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of grandparents in this situation. We had a national representation. Obviously, we had some diversity in terms of age and race and education. So although it wasn't a nationally representative sample, it was certainly a fairly heterogeneous sample. In terms of the findings, you know, we really tried to focus on some of the challenges. You know, we tried to ask specifically, you know, when it comes to things like getting support, to what extent do you feel support? And not surprisingly, many grandparents raising grandchildren don't feel like they have a lot of support, although there are supports out there, and we'll circle back to that topic, I believe. We asked about, you know, things like, you know, are you comfortable with discipline? Are you comfortable dealing with school-related issues? Obviously, if children come into the grandparents' care when they're infants or toddlers, they don't stay young forever. And for every infant or toddler out there, there's probably more school-age children. And then grandparents may feel less comfortable. They may have challenges registering their child for school. They may have feel less comfortable going to parent-teacher conferences or showing up at school events and, you know, soccer games and school performances and the like. And so we asked about some of those issues as well. And then the most elevating finding, and not surprisingly, I'm sorry, you know, some families and some grandparents in each of these instances expressed some difficulty, although for the most part, the majority felt comfortable dealing with, you know, teachers and school registration and things like that. But then the most elevating piece, though, actually was, we asked them about their overall perspective and whether they sort of felt good about their decision. And I can't think of a single grandparent that expressed regret about their decision. And I think that that's really the most important thing, that, you know, a grandparent stepping in and parenting a child, a young child, isn't without its challenges, but it's been overall rewarding. And in each of these instances, the grandparents sort of stood by their decision and felt good about it. So that was very positive.
Now, I mean, within the survey, did you find that were there things that grandparents, kind of wished that they knew? Was there something that says, do you feel that this would have been better if you would have known? Or what do you wish would have been provided ahead of time?
And that's a great question, Alan. First of all, I think that for many of the grandparents, they didn't anticipate it being as sustained or permanent relationship as they first thought. They thought it might be temporary. And so, and there's no predicting that, sort of one hopes for the best, but that's not always what happens. So I think that in some instances, when grandparents made the decision to provide, care on a temporary basis, they didn't foresee or intend necessarily, or I guess they had hoped that things would get better in terms of the parents' availability to recover and step in. I think that, for some of the grandparents, they'd wish they'd known about more resources. And again, there are resources out there for grandparents. There is a financial, there's obviously it's expensive to raise a child. And if a grand family has limited means, folks are retired, they have limited income, they should know about and take full advantage of the resources that are out there. And the resources really not just financial, but they're also emotional. And so just, connecting families with support agencies or organizations is important. I think that there's also a concern. Sometimes grandparents will start out suspicious about social service agencies. And it's only with time that they may feel more comfortable, not feeling in some way that a social service agency is going to potentially, take their grandchild away from them for one reason or another, either because of limited means or some other, circumstance within the household. So I think those are some of the instances. Every family situation is different. And whether in terms of, warning signs of the troubles that are going to impede the parenting ability of the birth parent. And then, every household is different in terms of, the degree to which there's other supports, other family members that step in, financial resources, and of course, the needs of the child and the needs of the children can be greater. We know that children who are placed in a kinship care adoption situation have a greater likelihood of having, let's say, ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity, for example, and they may have a higher incidence of other developmental problems as well. One other study I want to just briefly mention, and we'll be presenting these findings. We looked at some data from the CDC. So I first started talking about my study, which was a national sample but not nationally representative. Well, we've just recently looked at some data that the CDC gathers, and that is nationally representative. And we looked at households that were headed by parents and compared them with households that were headed by grandparents. And we found, for example, that the incidence of ADHD, the frequency which a child had ADHD, was twice as high in the grandparent-headed household. So something like that alone can, pose additional challenges. But and that's why it's important that pediatricians and other child care professionals are sensitive to the range of developmental problems that a child in a kinship care placement might have.
Now, as you're talking about these statistics, the thought came to mind for me, is there a statistic that compares an adoption that goes to where they end up with kin, I suppose, just grandparents, but with some sort of relative, versus adoptions to where they end up with someone who they're not related to? Is there a statistic?
I don't know if I can provide that statistic, Alan. There's certainly... the adoption where it's a complex world and different children are placed for adoption under very, very different circumstances. And whether it be, the young mother, there's a big difference between someone, a young mother, a 15 or 16-year-old young girl deciding to place her baby up for adoption and it potentially going to a family that's not related versus a circumstance like we've been talking about where the intent perhaps of the birth mother was to take care, to raise her child, and then for one reason or another is unable to do that. And then it goes to potentially a crisis and then goes to a kinship placement.
Okay. We have a listener question that has come in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time. Oftentimes these are people who work during the day, and so they get a press release that we send out ahead of time. They want, they like the subject, they want to hear an answer to their question, but they know that they can't call me back to do it. So again, it's much appreciated that they take the time to do this. So this one reads, my son was killed in a motorcycle accident before his son was born 3 years ago. My daughter-in-law is leaving my grandson with me more and more while she is out having a very active social life. Her temperament and change in attitude suggests alcohol and drugs may be involved. I can't plan my own activities as I never know when he will be dropped off or picked up. I am hoping she will consider giving me full custody so that I can be a stabilizing factor in our lives, but I am afraid to say or do anything aggressive as she may pull him from me totally. I am in desperate need of guidance. Does your book address these issues as well, and can you speak to them in the interview? This is from Grace in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, that's a sort of a poignant story, and my heart goes out to you, Grace. If I understand correctly, you've lost your son, who's the father of your grandchild, and the child's mother is perhaps not fully committed to parenting the child and is relying on Grace to help out, which then takes its toll in terms of Grace, in terms of a little bit lifestyle, but really the core issue is whether or not the child's needs are being met and whether when the mother is taking care of the child, whether she's a responsible parent. I think that, you know, the critical question is going to come down to whether or not the mother is in any way not acting optimally, but really whether she's, you know, acting responsibly. And I heard mention of concerns about drugs and alcohol. Obviously, if there's substance use issues, that would be a major red flag and would potentially or likely prompt social service intervention in terms of placement, potentially an alternate placement, perhaps presumably a kinship placement. But there's not enough detail in the question to know to what extent that's an issue. In terms of the book and the guidance that we give within the book, it's not quite to that situation. It's really more typically where grandparents have already stepped in and are playing a more active role. However, I think that the commonality is that, you know, the first concern really has to be the interest of the child. And depending on, I didn't hear mention about the mother's family and whether there's anybody else in the mother's family that's either helping Grace in terms of respite care, or whether there's also anybody else in the mother's family who could perhaps more comfortably address concerns about either the mother's lifestyle, the mother's parenting, and the mother's possible substance use. And those would be important resources to tap in terms of perhaps, you know, getting the mother to confront or deal with and recognize whether or not she's fit to parent this grandchild, and hopefully do that in a way without necessarily jeopardizing the relationship between Grace and her daughter-in-law. Without knowing more, it's hard to be a little more prescriptive, but I think if there are concerns about child neglect or child abuse, you know, those would automatically prompt evaluation and intervention. If the mom is just making irresponsible choices, but otherwise meeting the needs of the child at its most basic, then I think that, you know, reaching out to other family members might be helpful especially if there are shared concerns. But I do understand where Grace is coming from, that risking alienating her daughter-in-law and then losing access to her grandson. Rights of grandparents have strengthened in different states in recent years. I don't know specifically, I think I heard Tennessee. I don't know specifically in Tennessee what the rights, visitation rights are with grandparents, but that would be something else that Grace might want to research as well.
Well, and I think that's going to bring us to a question in regards to the process of securing custody. But before we get to that, we're going to take a break. So everybody stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that. But we're speaking with Dr. Andrew Asman, and we are talking about the Grand Family Guidebook. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And we are talking about the Grand Family Guidebook. With us is Dr. Andrew Asman. And when we took a break, we were going to go to, we just heard from a grandparent who is concerned about her daughter-in-law in regards to if the child is being taken care of. So there are going to be situations in which grandparents may need to just go for custody if it's in the best interest of the grandchildren. So the question is, can you please share with our listeners what the process of securing custody is like? Because I know, having dealt with it a little bit through our investigation company, it can be pretty difficult.
Yeah, it's going to vary a little bit depending on circumstances. And by the way, just as a brief follow-up to that phone call from the grandmother in Tennessee, there are actually 20 states and the District of Columbia where grandparents who are informal primary caregivers have some legal standing. And unfortunately for Grace, Tennessee is not one of those states. But in terms of your question, you know, there are different levels in a sense of placement or guardianship. And in some cases, it can be an informal, you know, physical custody, which is perhaps the initial way that a child may come into a grandparent's home. And on the one hand, the child is known to be safe. On the other hand, in that arrangement, the grandparent or kinship, other relatives don't have any legal rights over the child. And so it may seem like a good temporary solution, but the problem is that the parent can take the child back at any time and without notice. And then if it's an informal arrangement like that, there may be difficulties or obstacles for things like registering a child for school because the grandparent doesn't have legal standing. The next rung up in terms of, you know, sort of a custody arrangements would be sort of a temporary legal custody where a child is with a grandparent or other relative. And again, it confers peace of mind knowing that the child is being cared for by family members. But again, it has limited protections and the child can be removed either by the parent or by a court, depending on who granted the temporary legal custody. And again, there's some limits in terms of what grandparents can do in terms of, you know, if the child needs medical care and the like, and that's going to vary by state law. There's something called, you know, pro se custody, where you have custody obtained without really legal assistance, and that can involve different filings. But really, if grandparents or other family members are looking to have a sustained and commitment to the child with full protections, then what they're going to look to do is either get legal guardianship at the least or adoption in the end. And with, you know, legal guardianship, the grandparent or the relative can make all the decisions that are necessary about the child. It's not terminating the parent's rights. And that's where the limitation of legal guardianship is, that it can be reversed down the road. And then the ultimate in terms of the process, in terms of permanence, when circumstances dictate, is for grandparent or other family member to become, to adopt the child. And then at that point, the child is legally the child of that grandparent, and they have all the rights and obligations of a birth parent, and if they want to change the name, they can. It does require termination of parental rights, and it would depend on the circumstances as to when that can happen. Typically, if there's been any sort of financial support through the courts from the parents, that would end. But as I said, there are various provisions for support for adoption, and as well as foster placement. So those are the different types of custody arrangements, with adoption providing permanence, but it requires termination of parental rights. I think that probably most of the listeners are in some, those that are concerned would have been a sort of a, hopefully a static relationship either with, you know, legal guardian or adoption status. And they would confer with either social workers or lawyers in terms of going forward if they want to fulfill or proceed with adoption.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point what you just mentioned in regards to a lawyer. And in Grace's situation, you know, I can see that she has a fear that if she starts bringing up something like that, that she'll be cut off completely. But it may be a good start to just say, you know, for the best interest of the child, you know, I'm going to need a limited power of attorney in case something happens. So, you know, the school wants me to have it to pick them up and take them to school, you know, and or if some sort of medical situation occurs, that I have a power of attorney for, say, medical and educational purposes. But to start mm-hmm. with something like that, it also establishes, if you do want to make a change later on, something that they can then bring in court and go, well, Your Honor, look, we had this for this period of time already, and everything went fine. So it might be another way that Grace or somebody in that same situation could at least start the ball and roll in the right direction.
And that's a great comment, Alan. Thank you. The other comment I might make, and we do talk about this in the Grand Family Guidebook, is the importance or helpfulness of documenting when documenting events. So, you know, if there's concerns about the parents' health or concerns about substance use, if there's instances where the child is being dropped off last minute without any planning, and there's concerns about either the parental commitment to the child. I don't think that in this instance, from what we've heard, that these would necessarily be determinative, but it's certainly better to have, you know, documentation just to either give a sense for frequency, get a sense for if, you know, there seems to be undue emotional stress or anything else that might be extenuating circumstances that would argue that perhaps the child's best interests aren't being met.
You know, in the introduction, I mentioned your co-author, Christine Adame, and I mentioned that she's also parenting her son's son. What are some of the most important things that she shared with you that she has learned from her experience that got passed on into the book?
Well, you know, collaborating with Chris has been wonderful. And actually, this is our second book related to adoptive parenting. We did a book together about 15 years ago And at that point, it was sort of a more generic advice in terms of just, you know, when parents choose to adopt the child. But here, you know, she felt a passion for this book in part based on her own personal circumstance and her experiences. And although I'm not involved with the social media world whatsoever, I'm like sort of giving away my age, although Chris is 1 or 2 years older than us. We're both in our 60s. But Chris is very much involved. And so she's, you know, in touch with many other grandparents raising grandchildren. This is a way for her to both, you know, get support for herself and her husband as they go through this process, but it's also informed the book in terms of the experience and perspective of others. And so, you know, and Chris is a very special person. You know, she's very dynamic. She's fearless in the sense of stepping up and doing whatever is right for her grandson. And I know that, you know, she and her husband, you know, do everything possible to help their grandson. You know, her grandson has had some health and developmental issues. And so I think that, you know, her experience, although not unique, is a little bit different. I'm always impressed at how much, you know, she's rallied and has been upbeat, even when dealing with, you know, sort of, you know, a series of problems that she never could have anticipated. I think there's certainly a lesson there. I guess two lessons. One is that, you know, when grandparents step in and they make this commitment to a grandchild, they don't exactly know what the future holds. But again, going back to sort of that upbeat message, you know, I also know that Chris thinks it's far and away the best thing that she could have done for her grandson. And she and her husband both feel wonderful about that decision, despite the challenges.
That's great. Now, I know that there has been a lot written in regards to adoptive parents and what they should say to children and when is the time to tell them that they're adopted. Is there a best time? So there's been a lot written about that. How does that differ now when it is an adoption, but yet we're now talking about a relative? You know, it's like you're also my grandchild, and you're, you know, I'm sure there are situations where the children have no relationship with their birth parents. So, you know, what do the grandparents tell these children about their parents? Or when the child asks, what happened to my first mom and dad? Why am I living with you instead? Yeah. How do you recommend grandparents answer these type of questions?
We give a lot of very specific sort of prescriptive advice in the book about this, and it's going to vary, as you said, by circumstance. You know, in some instances, the birth parent is still actively involved, if not necessarily in the home. And it's also going to depend heavily in terms of the age of the child. And I think that, you know, parenting grandparents need to be sensitive, both in terms of, you know, what that child can understand, and then also in terms of being sensitive in terms of how they present the mother or the father in terms of the reasons why they're not able to raise that child. And, you know, we encourage parenting grandparents to basically put the best possible face on the situation. And it's not a chance, or it's not the time to be disparaging, you know, even if the birth parent has been completely irresponsible, or, you know, and it's not necessarily for health reasons or other reasons, but just, you know, poor parenting choices. The bottom line is that we generally encourage grandparents to try and be honest, but also don't see it as a chance to disparage or, you know, knock the parents, just because I don't think anything good comes from that. You know, if a parent is unable to raise their child, then, you know, it can simply be explained that, you know, that the parent, you know, had some health issues that interfered or had some problems or, you know, wanted what's best and wasn't able to do that. If incarceration is involved, then, you know, they can be honest about that as well. They may even be visitation in terms of, you know, visiting a mother or father in jail. And again, try and be as positive as possible. And you could say something like, you know, well, you know, your mother or your father, you know, made some bad choices, bad decisions, and unfortunately, you know, is paying the price in terms of, you know, having to go to jail for some bad decisions. And but they love you so much, and they want you to be safe and happy, and that's why they trusted your care to me.
And I love the last part that you just added to that, because that's exactly what I was thinking at that point, is that, you know, the main thing is that they need to know that they weren't abandoned and that they are loved. That's the two main things. And no matter what they went through, I think if we can project those two points, they're probably doing the best service they can for that child. So another question in regards to school. I'm one of those people that went prematurely gray, and I also had children at a later age, and the combination of that such that at school there were times in which teachers, not trying to do anything wrong or be mean or anything, but inadvertently would refer to me as their grandfather. And it wasn't a problem with me, but you know, what are some of the social problems that might come up at school when the children are being raised by grandparents? Is there issues in regards to how to deal with bullies? Do the teachers do anything differently? What are some of those things? Because, I mean, obviously it's a huge thing, because we're jumping a whole other generation for what we relate to in school.
Well, it really takes on many different layers. I alluded earlier to, you know, whether or not grandparents feel comfortable being, you know, on the sidelines at a soccer game when everybody else is 20 or more years younger than them. So it's in some ways it can be a challenge to fit in. And I think that, you know, for some grandparents raising their grandchildren, it can be somewhat socially, you know, isolating. And I know it's a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, if they're not able to socialize, if they don't have the freedom and the time that their retired peers do. And on the one hand, and on the other hand, they're not as young and generationally different from the parents of their grandchildren, then they may feel sort of in another world. But the challenges as it relates to school, bullying is certainly a possibility, and children at some point, you know, may end up having to explain, you know, how come their mother looks so much older than all the others. But it can also, that age gap can translate to other difficulties. You know, I alluded to the fact that I don't do social media, and yet most parents are going to be, you know, involved on Facebook or use some other social media platform to share information. One of the things that we looked at was even in our own study as to what extent, you know, the parenting grandparents felt comfortable helping kids with homework or helping kids with, you know, the computer, and how many of them even use the computer. And obviously the fact that ours was an email survey, we probably had a slightly skewed response, but the bottom line is it's going to vary a little bit by age, and technology is one of many things that can sort of separate older parenting grandparents from, you know, the next generation who are parenting their grandchildren's parenting the peers of their grandchild.
You alluded to earlier on the possible benefits. What are some of the benefits as far as where the grandparents are raising their children's children? Are they eligible to receive additional monthly benefits like from Social Security, or are there other government subsidies or financial aid that they might be eligible for?
So there's a multitude of potential benefits, and it's going to depend in part on basically three factors. One is household income, in terms of how many benefits they would qualify for. It's going to impact on, it'll be determined by whether or not the child has a disability or not. And I mentioned earlier that there's a higher incidence of either developmental disabilities or psychiatric issues in children in kinship placements. And then the third is the state. So there are many of these are state-mediated programs, and so household income, the location of the household in terms of which state, and then whether or not the child has special needs. Those will be three important things. But there's a range of benefits that children can might qualify for. There's something called TAMF, or temporary assistance for needy families, and there's something. And even if the grandparents don't qualify, there's something called child-only TAMF, and so that's a possibility. There's food assistance for younger children, and the program used to be food stamps, then became SNAP, and I believe in California it's called CalFresh. That's another form of support. Obviously, if the child is adopted, then there are can be tax benefits, and there's a variety of benefits in terms of either child tax credit or an earned income tax credit or a dependent care credit, and those progressively add up and will vary again. The benefits will depend on the household. There's for children, you mentioned SSI, or Supplemental Security Income. And I think there's also a state supplementary payments in California. That's a possible form of supplement. And then there are others, just even in terms of things like, you know, lunch programs or Head Start and things like that. So depending on the age of the child, the needs of the child, the resources of the family, and the state that they live in, there's a multitude. One of the websites I think that your listeners will find extremely helpful is raisingyourgrandchild.org. So at raisingyourgrandchild.org, there's a links to various resources on a state-specific basis. And as I said, you know, each state is somewhat different. So if you go to the raisingyourgrandchild.org, you can go to resources and then find exactly what's available in the state in which you live. I can tell you that also that there was a law recently passed at the federal level, which is trying to facilitate even more to what extent the needs of grandparents raising grandchildren are met. And that law was just passed in July of 18, and I believe within 6 months the mandate is to provide a report, and which I'm sure will then lead to greater information and greater access for grandparents raising grandchildren.
Well, you just read my mind, because that was going to be my question as you were talking about that. Is where can they find it? And you took care of that. I love it.
I was going to mention one other website. You know, there's a website, benefits.gov. It's a federal website, and if you don't mind filling in a whole lot of questionnaire. So the first website I gave is will point families to a multitude of resources that are state and even county specific. And so, you know, raisingyourgrandchild.org will get you to those lists of resources. But if you don't mind filling out a questionnaire anonymously at benefits.gov, it'll then tell you what, to some extent, what benefits you might qualify for. And so that would be another way for listeners to determine what benefits exactly they may have available to them.
All right. That's wonderful. And for those of you that are out there driving, we will make sure that these websites are put on our site, the Answers for the Family site, or a link. You'll find a link directly to Dr. Adman's site. So either way, you'll be able to get that information. We're just about out of time, but we've got another comment that has come in, and this one reads, what a great book. I just purchased it as soon as I saw the summary from Answers for the Family. It is a topic that is barely spoken about in the mainstream media. As a psychologist, sometimes dealing with parents with young adult children who just can't launch their lives, the fact that there are grandchildren seriously impacted and who are the tail end of their story puts another in an even more serious wrinkle in how parents and grandparents are coping. Thank you so much for stepping up with a resource we can place in our hands. And this is from Paul in Minnesota.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's wonderful. Actually, you know, I've been so fortunate. I'm a pediatrician, as you mentioned at the top of the show, Alan, and We reached out to some of my pediatric colleagues who looked at the book, and I've just been blessed to have such enthusiastic praise from a multitude of high-profile child advocates. You know, former Surgeon General of the United States, Marion Wright Edelman at Children's Defense Fund, as well as a multitude of prominent pediatricians. So we put our heart and soul and lots of time and effort into the book, and it seems to be rewarded by getting very nice praise. And I'm glad to hear at least one of your listeners has already had a chance to see the book, or at least see what the book's about.
Yeah, well, and that's great. And fortunately, we send out a couple of press releases, and one goes out about a week ahead of time. So every once in a while, we get somebody who's already managed to get the book, which is great. So, Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time, and not only for writing the book, but taking the time and sharing this on our show. I think it's a great topic, and as our listener said in their comment, one that mainstream media doesn't seem to speak about much. So you're getting the word out, and we appreciate that very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you making the time available to me.
All right. And for everybody else out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will be replaying one of the most popular shows from our archives. It's called Everyday Narcissism, Yours, Mine, and Ours. And our guest is Nancy Van Dyke. And I suggest that you check that out, because it probably isn't what you think it is. Because when I did the show, I realized that it covered a lot of things, and it really makes you think. So it's well worth listening to. And please, when you get a chance, visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube. You can subscribe to it that way. It's sent to you automatically, and it is waiting for you. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It really allows us to reach out to more people, and we really appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, share them with others, and give us a comment. Your comment matters to us. So we thank you for that. Continue to spread the word. Be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.